supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Military refueling planes will keep flying out of New Jersey for many years to come. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports on a big decision from the Pentagon.
Washington says New Jersey's Joint Base McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst will host the U.S. Air Force's next-generation air refueling tankers, known as the KC-46A. U.S. Senator Bob Menendez says the decision is a good one for jobs in the area.
The Air Force has recognized, in my mind, the base's strategic value, and it's expressed confidence in its ability to be part of America's national security strategy.
Menendez says it also means preserving some of the 40,000 jobs the joint base supports.
The fact that the Air Force has decided to base the KC-46 here at McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst is critical to the base's future and to our national security.
The decision should preserve the facility for many years, if not decades, says the senator. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
President-elect Donald Trump has floated the idea of passing a trillion-dollar infrastructure package, which Northeastern lawmakers hope could be used to improve rail safety. WHYY Washington correspondent Matt Laszlo reports on how Trump's own party is more dubious of the proposal than Democrats are.
Last week, when more than 100 commuters were injured in a New York train crash, many lawmakers in the region immediately thought of the 2015 Amtrak crash in Philadelphia's Port Richmond neighborhood, which killed 8 and injured more than 200. Democratic Senator Chris Coons takes the train from Delaware to Washington daily and says rail safety needs to be addressed.
We have broader challenges and risk exposure in the commuter rail system that deserve attention and investment.
After the president-elect floated a massive infrastructure bill, many Northeastern lawmakers, like Coons, immediately thought of rail.
Any infrastructure package that deals with our real challenges as a country has to improve rail infrastructure, commuter rail, regional rail, national rail. Our competitors around the world are investing in cutting-edge rail infrastructure from China to Japan to Germany. The United States needs to also invest in upgrading and modernizing our rail infrastructure.
With Democrats playing defense against most of Trump's proposals and many of his cabinet nominees, Philadelphia Congressman Brendan Boyle says the infrastructure proposal is a breath of fresh air.
I will say that as someone who's strongly opposed Trump's election and is concerned about what Trump will do as president, I would say the one silver lining in a very dark cloud is he seems to have the more Democratic position when it comes to transportation and infrastructure.
Trump's infrastructure package is creating strange bedfellows in this hyper-partisan Washington, according to Boyle.
On this, the politics of this issue, you would have more Democrats voting for it than Republicans. But you would presumably in Trump have enough of the Republicans he would be able to carry because, you know, this was one of the issues where he did not sound like a doctrinaire conservative.
While not all Republicans are clamoring for a massive infrastructure bill, many from our region are. Congressman Ryan Costello from Chester County says he's hopeful the president sends Congress an infrastructure bill.
Someone such as myself representing the Philadelphia suburbs, certainly my ears perk up when we talk about more of an investment in public transportation and fixing our roads and bridges, mindful that we have more miles of roads in disrepair in Pennsylvania than any other state in the country. Also mindful that we have more structurally deficient bridges in Pennsylvania than anywhere else in the country.
But Costello says the politics of any transportation bill get tricky quickly.
That's the other piece of the puzzle here is you're going to see those in the Northeast want to see a focus on at least our commitment to public transit. You're going to see those on the coast want to see more investment in our ports. You're going to see the aviation, and you're going to see a lot of regional airports. So everybody's going to want their bite at the apple on this thing.
The president-elect has floated the idea of a public-private partnership to pay for the massive transportation bill. But Costello says he hasn't heard any details on the proposal, so it's premature.
So when you're talking about a big infrastructure package that isn't paid for, we don't have any specifics on that, nor do we see how the money would be allocated. It really is very ambiguous, and it's not really ripe for any sort of vote here, that's for sure.
That's where Northeast lawmakers could be key players in the debate. While many Republicans from the South and Midwest may balk at the idea of a massive transportation bill, South New Jersey Republican Congressman Tom MacArthur says he's going to try to convince his conservative colleagues to view the proposal differently.
I think infrastructure investment, it's not a sunk cost. It's an investment in future growth.
With Republicans focusing on repealing Obamacare and on a major overhaul of the nation's tax code, Northeast lawmakers fear their dream of a massive transportation bill that includes rail safety may get stuck on the back burner. For WHYY News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Continuing a trend, many of the top-grossing PG-13 movies contain gun violence. A new study in Pediatrics magazine speaks to this, and joining me is the lead author of the study, Dan Romer, research director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center of the University of Pennsylvania. Dan, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Oh, it's good to be here.
This is actually a follow-up on a study conducted in 2013. What has changed since then?
Well, we wanted to see if the trend that we observed back in 2013, which was to look at top-grossing movies starting in 1985 and comparing PG-13 versus R-rated movies for the amount of gun violence, we found at that time that right around 2012, the amount of gun violence that was occurring in these top-grossing PG-13 movies was starting to exceed the rate that we observed pretty steadily in R-rated movies over that time period. So we wanted to go back and look, well, has that changed over the last 3 years? And what we found was that the trend is actually increasing. It's now going up with what looks like no ceiling in sight.
Seems that gun violence sells, but is it qualitatively different in PG versus R depictions?
Yes, the PG-13 gun violence that we commonly observe is much less likely to show the consequences of the violence. You don't see any blood. You hardly see any suffering. You see people falling down and, you know, possibly showing some effects, but nothing that would be particularly realistic or upsetting to audiences. So Hollywood has learned that as long as they can do that, they can get a PG-13 rating and they can fill these films with a good deal of gun violence.
The question, of course, is does this gun violence that can be seen by virtually anyone at movie age can then lead to increased incidence of gun violence?
And that's the million-dollar question. We don't have the answer to that. We would need more research to really determine that. We do know that movies with lots of violence, as well as video games, encourage some kids to become more aggressive. They'll be seen to fight more with their peers, and they'll be rated as more aggressive by their peers. What we don't know is if they watch a lot of movies that display guns and the use of them, what the impact of that is on their feelings about guns, the acceptance of using a gun. Would a 5-year-old who watched one of these movies and had access to a gun at home think that it's just, you know, a nice toy that you can shoot it and it wouldn't harm anyone? We don't know the answer to those questions.
Now, presumably a 5-year-old would not have ready access to a PG-13 movie, though.
Well, they could. I mean, there's nothing to stop a 5-year-old from going into a movie theater if they're with someone else that can get them there. The R rating would prevent that, but in most cases, but the PG-13 rating essentially means anyone can walk into a theater as long as they can buy a ticket or someone buys a ticket for them. There's no restriction on who can enter a theater with that rating. The only rating that has any restriction would be the R and the NC-17.
Research on content portraying smoking or drinking without featuring the harmful effects and consequences does demonstrate that some teens, as a result of exposure, are prone to imitate smoking and drinking, and it's tempting to draw that line, but what comes to mind is smoking and drinking are legal, gun violence not.
Well, yeah, gun violence is not, but having access to a gun is not a barrier, particularly in a lot of homes, and so someone who has the intent to want to harm people could have access to those weapons, whether they're legal or not.
To what extent is the movie industry, as it were, aware of either this study or attempts to curtail depictions of gun violence?
Well, we know the ratings board is aware because they've put out some responses to our study, but they feel that...
Is that essentially damage control, or are they really listening?
I don't think they're really listening, to be honest, because they feel that parents are not upset by seeing these films or having their children see them. And we've actually observed that. We've done studies with parents, and we find that if they've seen a lot of these PG-13 movies with lots of violence, they become, as we put it, desensitized to it. It becomes normal for a movie to have that. And they think it's not an issue for their 12 or 13 or 14-year-old to watch those kind of movies.
Dan, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Hey, thank you.
Dan Romer, Research Director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center of the University of Pennsylvania, lead author of the article in Pediatrics magazine. And you can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. A new play is opening in Bryn Mawr this weekend that was written by a collection of teenagers intended for teenagers. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports on a project to dramatize current issues experienced by young people.
Attention students and staff. We understand many of you may miss your fifth period classes, but we are doing everything we can to move forward with the regular school day.
The intercom announcement tells students that their high school is on lockdown, but does not explain why. Nine kids are stuck in a classroom without a teacher, trying to figure out what's going on. Is this an active shooter situation? Is it just a drill? Did someone commit suicide?
Geez, of course it's not a suicide.
A suicide?
It could be so many other things, Jackie. Don't jump to conclusions.
The instinct most people have, especially young people, is to immediately reach for their phone, check social media and news websites to figure out what's going on. Director Tim Popp says that is both a benefit and a problem.
So they have all these different ways of accessing information. And one of the things I've been curious about as the teaching artist is who's helping them process that. Kids are in a room, there's no adult, and they have access to information, and they're not processing it in a productive way.
Look!
In the play, one character exists only offstage. We never see her. She's only on social media. The kids in the classroom begin to believe she may have killed herself because she once linked to an article about depression on her Facebook page.
Why would she post something like that if she was happy? Besides, Robin Williams is her Twitter icon.
Yeah, because Robin Williams is hilarious.
Robin Williams also killed himself.
This play, called The Time We Give Each Other, was written by a team of 16 teenagers who spent a year working on the script. They are part of the Butterfly Project. It's a collaboration between Philadelphia Young Playwrights and the Wolf Performing Arts Center in Bryn Mawr. That's where the play will debut. One of the writers is 13-year-old Audrey Blindman. She says they collectively came up with a theme that resonates deeply for all of them. Their cell phones.
A lot of the plot comes off of the phone. They take things from social media accounts, they pull things off of websites, and they put it all together to create this sort of story that's not even real. They just make assumptions and they keep building on it until they come up with something.
This play is the second production of the Butterfly Project. The first began 6 years ago at the Wolf Center. It was a pre-existing script based on writings by children who were held in a World War II concentration camp. To make a more contemporary play, the Wolf Center partnered with Philadelphia Young Playwrights to let teenagers describe how they are living now. Haley Stokes is 16. She performed in the concentration camp play and then jumped at the chance to write an original script.
Using social media and the cell phone usage sort of opened up a passageway into other topics we could touch on, such as social injustice. We had conversations about privilege, about disabilities and sexuality.
After its debut at the Wolf Center, the play will spend about a year touring through schools in the region. The director, Tim Popp, says then it will be retired so that the project can focus on writing a new play with a new set of playwrights.
We want to keep ourselves relevant and in touch with what's happening and what matters to the kids. We want to remain open to what needs to be spoken about.
I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Many theater premieres are set to hit Philadelphia and the surrounding area this spring. Let's make sense of the plays and players with NewsWorks Theater critic Howard Shapiro. Howard, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you, Dave.
You know, every year they say, best yet, better than ever. Well, is 2017 going to be more of the same in that regard?
Well, there's no way to tell. Even as they're saying best yet, they have no way to tell. I think what we can say is that the spring season, which begins now and lasts through midsummer, is incredibly varied with lots of great ideas. You can see anything from the oldies like West Side Story to new stuff that never be seen on stage, many of it by Philadelphia playwrights.
You have broken this down into various categories, and let's look at some of them. There is, like you say, the eclectic, far out, unexpected, surreal.
Yeah, there's some of the eclectic. Constellations, which opens very shortly at the Wilma, is a beautiful play, I think, that was done on Broadway two seasons back. And it's a strange experience because it's a play that begins easily enough, but then begins again and again and again. It has a kind of Groundhog Day feel, but it doesn't have a Groundhog Day sensibility. It's a really serious and intriguing story. Another play that I found kind of far out is one that's going to be at Philadelphia Theater Company called Hand to God. Hand to God is a play you either love or hate. I'm sort of in the latter, I'm afraid. It's about a hand puppet who becomes demonic. The hand puppet starts to be a good church puppet. He's in the hand of a kid who's in a church session. And then all of a sudden, he takes off the kid and the puppet into, well, Neverland. So there are people like me who think it's kind of smutty and juvenile. And there are people who think it's like the old-fashioned morality plays and has a lot to say.
Guaranteed to be fun are any of the number of plays designed to tickle the funny bone.
If you want a good, elegant laugh, you can go see Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest, which is always current, it seems. It's going to be at the Walnut Street Theater main stage. The Lions, I don't know if you've heard of that play. That's a play that was on Broadway a few years ago with Linda Lavin. And it's about a Jewish family where the father, who is an elderly guy, is in the hospital. And the family gathers around him. And all of their social filters are off when they figure out he's dying anyway. It's very funny, and it's also very poignant.
How about shows that are on their way to New York?
Well, there is one show on its way to New York, and there's one show coming from New York. On its way to New York is White Guy on the Bus. We have a playwright in town called Bruce Graham, who's been on the air here several times. And Bruce is really, really prolific. And his plays are produced all over the country and in England, too. He wrote a story about a guy, an upper-class white fellow, who takes a specific bus where he's the only white guy on it. It's really a look at race from different perspectives. That's going to be from Wilmington's Delaware Theater Company. And right after it's done there, in the end of February, it moves off Broadway in March. Coming from Broadway is one of the shows in the Kimmel Center's Broadway series called The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. And a lot of listeners have read the book of that. It's about a young boy on the autism spectrum who is exceedingly inventive. And it's a beautiful play. Almost every word in it is choreographed. It's more like going to a fringe show. It was a big success on Broadway. I think it may be the only presentation on the Broadway tours this year that's coming here that's not a musical.
The aforementioned White Guy on the Bus plays at Wilmington's Delaware Theater Company. Now let's bring New Jersey into the mix as well.
Cape May Stage, which has become really popular more and more with Philadelphians who are down there in the summer, is going to present a musical called Billy Bishop Goes to War, which has everything from martial arts to I don't know what. It's actually about a young man who was in World War I, and it marks our 100th anniversary of entry into World War I.
Sounds like if we were to take in each of these productions, that would map out our entire spring into summer.
Yeah, that's probably true. You know that, plus restaurants each time, what a night.
Thanks, Howard.
Thank you, Dave.
WHYY Theater critic Howard Shapiro. You can hear much more of our conversation at newsworks.org. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Pennsylvania's annual farm show isn't just about agriculture, and tomorrow evening, we'll hear about how natural gas drillers play a role as well. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.